Are you taking action in your life consistent with desired outcomes? Personal accountability is the key. Making the most of ourselves and our contributions to be of greater service to others. The ability to be counted on. Impact Corporation is dedicated to helping individuals and organizations around the globe improve performance through accountability for business results. Learn about Impact's consulting, training, and coaching products at impactcorp.com, impaqcorp.com, or call 310-275-0055. Impact Corporation, transformation you can count on. 310-275-0055.
Welcome again here on Circles of Change with Zara Larson and my broadcast partner, of course, Mark Samuel from Impact Corporation in Los Angeles. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Zara.
How are you today?
You know, I'm doing well, and I'm also have a little bit of a cold that I picked up on my travels this week.
Yes, that is the danger of being on airplanes these days, isn't it?
Boy, I'll tell you. And it's crowded now.
I know. That's exactly right. This time of year, particularly with, we were talking earlier, with graduations and people moving to new jobs, good sign in the process. Well, let me offer a brief reminder to those who may not be frequent listeners. By the way, Mark and I have done over 30 segments during our partnership times. You can find all of those segments on thelarsongroup.com under two impact tabs in the 2009 and 2010 directory. And, of course, anything you hear today, you can also find more information on Mark's site, which is impaq.com. Mark is president and founder of Impact, which is an international consulting firm providing coaching and consulting with an emphasis on corporate and personal accountability. He's an acclaimed speaker, a practical visionary, and he helps organizations now for over 30 years across a multitude of industries to end blame in the ranks and create a place where people want to work because they can produce results. Well, Mark, I know today we thought about that subject of accountability and our many addictions. So where is it you want to go with this topic today?
Well, let's first start with just what do we even mean by addictions? Because I want to be very clear, I'm not an addiction therapist or, you know, I'm not in the technical mode of what we refer to as addictions. But I think of addictions in relationship to accountability as anything that we end up automatically doing without choice repeatedly.
Yeah, okay.
So it's, you know, obviously we can have food addictions, we can have sex addictions, we can have, you know, drinking addictions or alcohol addictions. But I'm looking at addictions a little bit differently than just that. I'm thinking of addictions as addictions to self-judgment, addictions to being negative, addictions to, you know, having fearful fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that we do over and over again, sort of out of choice, like we almost automatically go in a certain place and seem to, and that whatever that place is, whether that's an attitude or a thought process or belief or behavior that doesn't serve us, and yet we end up there over and over again, always looking back afterwards thinking, why did I do that? Or, you know, boy, this is not serving me at all. That, to me, is an addiction.
Well, and in fact, though, this idea of addictions is usually something that starts by choice or by circumstance, that you just start that rote freight train down. And so part of this, when you say beliefs, of course, some of this stuff we were given just by the virtue of how we were raised or where our family environment or community was.
Well, that's absolutely right. And you know, I can even say for myself, just my own addiction to self-judgment, because I grew up in a family that was very judgmental, isn't too hard to figure out that that might happen.
Yeah, that's right.
But ultimately, it is our choice to look at that and reverse it and change it and do whatever we can to stop that pattern. We cannot continue to blame our parents for how we were conditioned or blame a situation for having caused us to lose trust in ourselves or in God or whatever just because a certain situation didn't turn out the way we wanted it to.
Well, particularly when the situation or those who may have caused this dynamic may themselves not realize that what they're doing or how they're doing it is ingraining that kind of condition later on in our lives.
Well, and that's generally the case.
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize. And it is about our own education of ourselves and our own caring for ourselves to take hold of whatever that is that we go into automatically and look at it and say, if it's not serving me, let me start to change it now. And that, to me, is what accountability is truly about.
So I think now the question is, all right, that sounds good. I'd love to do that. But to reverse and change it, maybe you want to pick a specific example, Mark, and let's walk us through the steps on how we might, you know, embrace and understand then how to let go and move forward.
Yeah. And really, if we even sort of just follow the model that we've talked about so many times, it can actually work for us. And I think the real key in almost every addiction that I've certainly had to deal with, and I've dealt with a bunch, you know, I've dealt with food addictions, I've dealt with self-judgment addictions, you know, I've dealt with a lot. And the one thing that seems to be a core thread, and I've talked to addiction therapists about this, is that underneath the addiction is this underlying experience of shame, unworthiness, doubt, mistrust in ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is where we have to begin the healing of an addiction, is because really the whole, if there was anything that the listeners would take to heart, is that the first step in healing any addiction is loving yourself.
Yeah, that's
being
right.
Kind to yourself, being compassionate with yourself, and not judging yourself for the addiction, which causes the addiction to get worse.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. I mean, it's just so critically important.
Well, you know, and this is a situation just this week. I was working with a client who, on the surface, one would think that he's got everything in order with regard to the assignment he's working in within a company. But behind the scene, he's miserable. He's just dying.
Yeah.
He wants to break loose. He calls me in almost these, you know, sense of imminent disaster points in time, and to try to talk him down. And each time we're starting to get at the core, what it comes back to is he feels he's at fault for why things continue to play out the way it is. And so there is this codependency, or you'd say it's an addiction to everything else that this company assignment offers him, but he can't seem to break through and realize that at the end of the day, it's not healthy to say he's unworthy for something better even.
That's right. And here's where somewhat of a big confusion shows up when people use the model. Ownership is not the same as fault.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Fault is a blame for what I own. Ownership just is a simple fact that says, yes, I'm involved and I have some choices and I may not have learned how to do differently yet, but I'm taking the ownership without blame. And that's why I say that caring and compassion for ourselves has to be in there, because everyone has addictions. We're all dealing with them in one level or another. The real key is to love ourselves through the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not going to heal it. It's not going to solve the addiction. But what happens is you start to take away the element of making the addiction worse or passing one addiction on to another. Like a very good friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, had an addiction to alcohol. And he went to, finally, after, you know, many bouts of destructive behavior and things happening to him, he finally decided to go clean, went to AA, and was clean for many years. But his addiction transferred to an aerobics addiction. And to go along with the aerobics addiction, he had a sugar addiction, which is not uncommon for people that have issues with alcohol, because alcohol is a sugar, so it's replacing one for another. But the problem was it didn't never solve the addiction or the unworthiness that was beneath it all. And literally, 13 years, completely without a drink, has a broken relationship, can't sleep for the life of him, takes a drink to help him sleep. 3 months later, he was dead.
Yep, and that's it, the slide back process. It's good, that often the boomerang of trying to get loose can be harder than the others.
Well, absolutely, and that's why, you know, it's really, again, about solving the care for ourselves beneath the addiction and whatever that is. And then at the same time, we can then start to look at, okay, what are some behavior modifications that we can do?
So maybe let's think of maybe an example, Mark, addictions of behavior related in the workforce, you know, where people are on a team and just unknowingly the way they interact with one another seeds distrust as opposed to building trust. Maybe use that as a place to start. Okay, what's the core thread beneath it all? And then saying, how can someone stare that down and move forward with it?
Well, and I see it in a lot of different kinds of ways in the workplace. One thing that I see, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, is just the person with the negative attitude.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
Where nothing is ever good enough. And no matter what's going on, each day the person shows up, they're miserable. They don't want to be there. They don't like it. And it's really become an addiction because it's just become a habit of negativity. And they impact everyone around them. The problem with it is they don't really see it that way. They now are seeing the world that way. And it almost doesn't matter. It's not just at work. It's at home. And it's it's everywhere else. And so those, in some cases, are the hardest ones to address because until they see it for themselves, anytime someone's going to address it with them, they think is negative about them.
Well, and I think we even did a special spot, though, on how to be constructive in offering your negative inputs, or how do you offer alternative views so you're not viewed as, you know, the squeaky wheel. So we got to also be careful that some people misjudge someone's intention when they're trying to be helpful, but it comes off as negative, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's absolutely right. But then again, as we talked about before, is the focus on the past or is the focus on bettering
the
organization,
right.
on the future? And so as long as we're offering solutions, as long as we are offering new ideas and ways to move forward as opposed to moving backward, then that's when, you know, quote unquote, a devil's advocate or someone who's raising issues is actually serving.
That's right.
And not being destructive. It's when there's no solution out, or it's about, you know, we can't do something, or it causes paralysis, that negative ideas or critical or, you know, critical opinions then becomes destructive.
So let's take that example of someone who indeed is stuck in that negative attitude space and, mm-hmm. you know, something triggers and flips them to sort of have the opportunity to now see themselves in the mirror. How would you guide them to that next place?
Well, again, so the first step is, you know, is there something about me that I'm not caring for myself that's causing me to be negative? Mm-hmm. So instead of blaming the outer environment, what do I need to be doing to serve me more, to honor myself more, to care for myself more in a very real way? So that would be the first thing, because it's not just dealing with the behavior of negativity. It's, again, what's underneath it that we can begin to solidify inside of ourselves to build our self-esteem, build our confidence, build another option. And when someone starts caring for themselves, it's very hard to be negative.
Yeah, that's true. And part of that caring can be taking some steps to reflect on all the positive things they have in their life, the things that
right.
should bring them gratitude, or the times in which they were really joyful for the work environment they had.
Yes. And then the next step is then recognizing when one does go negative.
Mm-hmm.
So it is that awareness. And again, the real key in the awareness is, at first, you probably won't become aware of it until after the fact. Then you want to progress to the point of becoming aware of it during the fact, during the episode. And then you want to catch it just before you go into it to make another choice. And that's that key spot, because, you know, it's really important to turn your head and go in a different direction at that point, even though it's tempting to go back into it because it's so comfortable or a common pattern.
But I think it comes back to being at that point where you can say to yourself, now, why am I feeling this? Why did this happen? I recall a circumstance where I encountered someone that I was about to go knuckle to knuckle in the the work environment over some competitive analysis, or I don't even remember the specific circumstance. And I caught myself right before I walked in, got into it, because I realized that this person reminded me so much of someone else who had done some really underhanded things to me in my past. And it turns out this was not this person's intention. So I was already judging that this was headed down the wrong place. And when I kind of pulled myself out, as I often say, tried to be Shakespeare as opposed to the actor in the play, it was almost laughable. I'm like, why did I do that to that person and project, you know, Joe, who was the guy that did this to me 10 years ago?
Right. But now here, let's take that, because you just brought up something that's absolutely critical, and I'm so glad you did, and why it's so important to be kind to ourselves and compassionate and understanding with ourselves. Because most likely, with that previous experience you had 10 years ago, there is a light form of trauma that took place that is now in your cell memory that's causing, and I talked to, that's the one thing I did talk about with an addiction therapist once, and she was so clear about this. She says, you know, once you have a trauma and a cell memory, then it can create a reaction without you knowing it until after the fact.
Wow, yeah.
And literally, she said, the way that you heal that, and she says it literally creates, she's like studied the neuromechanical system, and it literally creates like a groove in your brain that then has to fill for it to heal. But she said the way to do that is, again, through kindness and care first. Then, as you discovered, use every time you move into the addiction as a learning experience to go back and say, what might have triggered this that I can learn from to then heal whatever took place in the past.
It is, and I think, Mark, also because you are such a student of religion and a faith of spirituality, both Western and Eastern, that, you know, the Buddhist approach, right, would be to say, oh, my old friend, welcome, I know you well, right? And by the way, you go sit on that side of the room because I don't need you right now.
That's right. And it really is almost looking at it as an object.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an object within us. Oh yeah, that's you. It's almost like making it separate without disdaining it or trying to resist it, because it's in that resistance that we attract it back. Like, I'm not going to do that again. Boy, I'm just never going to do that. I'm not going to take that one more drink. I'm not going to, you know. Boy, you start to do that, it almost turns into a battle of wits that you can lose. So it's much easier to say, no, that's just a part of me I'm not participating anymore. And, you served me well for a while. You don't serve me anymore, and I'm not going there.
That's right. I think the other piece that we should caution, of course, this doesn't necessarily have to be just us talking to the voices in our head. I mean, this idea of recognizing when I go negative, this could be a time to turn to a trusted colleague that, you know, during those meetings starts flipping their pen as the signal to say, whoa, I see it coming again. So the idea of looking perhaps to others to support you in this.
Well, and that is very, very important, actually, and that's why, and so often when you go to an AA meeting or an NA meeting or what have you, it's all about voicing what the issues are so that you can get the support. It's when it stays hidden that it actually builds in your own mind. So it's actually quite, it's one of the first places of taking command is being able to talk about it with a friend, let them know, and have them support you whenever they see a tendency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having someone to reach out to, that's the basis of those kinds of addiction groups. It's all around, you know, sharing, being open, and support.
I think the other piece, though, we have to still, though, comes back to this idea at the end of the day, you've got to make choice. And when it comes to negativity amongst people, sometimes that comes based on your hanging around with the wrong crowd. I mean, the toxicity that you know, I think you even said to it, you know, it's look at the six closest people around you, and that's how you're going to be shaped. And if they're carrying it with you, how do you know that you've got to put up different defense mechanisms?
That's exactly right, and even at work, you obviously have to work with certain people, but you can still do things to protect yourself in terms of the team, and that's why I like teams to create their own agreements. See, creating an agreement around how are we going to deal with negativity and how do we deal with conflict, and let's talk about those things and what is our expectation of each other for support, for creating a great work environment for us to work in. And once you see that, what happens is too often it's the negative people that have the strongest voice. And the positive ones are just sitting there getting, you know, lambasted in the process. Whereas if you could turn that around with an agreement to create a positive work environment, I mean, who's first of all going to argue with that? But then what happens is it gives a voice to all the positive people to say, hey, here's how we create that. And let's set up some guidelines for us that we can then hold each other accountable for that. You know, hey, you're getting off track, or you're going into a blame game, or you're showing up negative. They can all call time out and say, you remember that agreement we all created?
How
do we support you?
Yeah, and that way then it isn't necessarily become a personal fingering of people, but rather it's, look, this is not the environment we want, or let's, you know, I know the words I always use was, hey, let's do a process check here. Something doesn't feel right. Just stop the train and said, take a deep breath. Or I know you're really big on this as you work with groups, is humor. Is to say, wait a minute, where did I hear this cartoon before? Was this on YouTube? And suddenly people start to kind of rattle themselves. And I think the other piece often is when to keep ourselves out of judgment of others, to say, now, would this person be saying that if we were having the same conversation at church or at the picnic or in front of our spouses? So you try to say, how much might this be driven by the context of where we are as opposed to it being so deeply personal?
Yes. And that's where, again, it helps to have both the forgiveness and the recovery plan.
Mm-hmm.
What's the because, you know, when we get stressed out, you know, addiction is like any habit. It is a habit. So we've talked about this before, that anytime you get stressed out or overwhelmed, you're likely to go back into the addiction. You know, with my friend, he couldn't sleep because of the stress of the relationship breakup. So there are going to be those moments. What's the recovery plan so I don't go to alcohol, but I go to somewhere else so I can get some sleep? You know, there's got to be a recovery plan in place. And that becomes very key in the whole healing process. But you can't have recovery from a judgmental place. It's got to be from a forgiving place. Otherwise, you're going to get, you know, almost resentful to have to go into the recovery plan and then, go right back into whatever the addiction was.
So that's interesting. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying on that one, that you really want people to understand to stay away from the resentment, because that's like a chain on you.
Yes. And one of the ways to be more caring and compassionate with ourselves is to realize that whatever addiction we have, in most cases, now obviously there's going to be some extreme cases that this wouldn't apply, but you could say it for almost every case, you can be very grateful that you have that addiction instead of a different one.
Yes, that you said.
I'm very grateful I have a food addiction rather than a drug addiction. And that's true. You know, I can have some appreciation that maybe that was the only way for me to deal with some of the challenges in life that was going to come before me, that I developed an addiction to food as a safe way to deal with it and a way to keep me safe. And boy, am I glad and grateful that I didn't use, you know, alcohol or drugs instead of food.
Well, I think the other thing you would say, Mark, is that, oh, by the way, this is the human condition, folks. We all have these. You know,
yeah.
So it's not just me, it's everybody. It's just like saying that, you know, there's always going to be conflict in life. That's what the human condition is. Now, dealing with confrontation is another story of how to get out of that conflict.
Yes, yes. And at some point, I think in some respects, what addiction also brings us to is the fact that we're not alone. And it's so often where addictive patterns show up is where we're stressed and overwhelmed and think we're alone to solve it,
mm-hmm.
and are angry or upset or, you know, resentful of that situation, and then we do self-destructive behavior. When in fact, if we could truly get beyond, first of all, that we're not alone, that there's probably other people to support us, but almost go to the spiritual side of things and say, wait a minute, where's my faith? How do I ask God for support in this? And how do I gain that connection with Spirit as my partner and friend to help me when I'm feeling pretty stressed with the situation? And sometimes it's not to change the situation, but just to get me through the situation.
Isn't it true? And also for people that usually survive and get on the other side of this, they can become an advocate, a teacher, and a mentor for others to help them.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, Mark Samuel from Impact Corporation, as always, thanks for the wisdom, advice, and support today. And we'll catch up with you really soon.
Great. Thanks so much, Zara.
You bet.
Are you taking action in your life consistent with desired outcomes? Personal accountability is the key, making the most of ourselves and our contributions to be of greater service to others, the ability to be counted on. Impact Corporation is dedicated to helping individuals and organizations around the globe improve performance through accountability for business results. Learn about Impact's consulting, training, and coaching products at impactcorp.com, impactcorp.com, or call 310-275-0055.